Hey everybody, this is Peter Wogan, and today we've got a special treat. I'm going to be talking to David Sutton, who of course is the co-author of Hollywood Blockbusters, and I thought it would be interesting to follow up with him on the book, ask him about some things that don't appear in the book. So we'll only get to cover a few of the movies that are in the book. We'll start off with The Big Lebowski, and then we'll move on to Jaws, and we'll end up with a little bit about The Godfather. So I hope you enjoy it, and let's get right to the first segment talking about The Big Lebowski. And so I want to ask you, if you were a character in The Big Lebowski, who would you see yourself as? Well, let me ask you two questions, actually, if I could. Who do you think you're most like, and which one of those characters would you most like to be?
I think I'm most like DeFino.
DeFino. Oh, the Snoop?
That's right.
Okay, you are full of surprises. And I thought I knew you. I mean, I have to say, for the record here, that I've known this guy for many years since graduate school, and you're pulling this stuff. Are you pulling my leg, in fact, or are you just, you're being serious again?
I'm a brother Seamus.
I mean, is that like an anthropology thing? You find that humorous comparing anthropology to brother Seamus? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think we're always kind of trailing behind the main character.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, main character in this case would be just success.
More like life, which comes to the second part of the question, who would you like to be? And I'd probably have to say the Maud in that case.
Again, you are full of surprises here, really. So Maud, I mean, because I would, of course, think most people, the obvious choice would be
the Duke.
Yeah. But Maud, and why would that be?
Because she knows what she wants, and she goes after it.
That's right, and she's not afraid to use words for female anatomy, male anatomy.
That's right, and she's flying through the air, making her paintings.
And you would like to be flying naked, making paintings.
I could see that, metaphorically or literally, yeah.
Well, that's excellent. Man, that really leaves us all with something to think about. I'm going to leave you all with that image. Okay, we're going to have to continue here in the Starbucks now. We'll just talk real closely into the microphone. This should work fine. Wanted to ask you some questions now related to Jaws. For example, the shark is obviously central to Jaws. I think studies have shown this. And I'd like to ask you, I know you're a vegetarian and an anthropologist, or as you say, in an article had one woman in Greece, for example, used to say, to introduce you, hi, this is David, he doesn't eat meat. Very succinct summary. But I wonder, would you ever consider eating shark if it was served? For example, maybe if it was in Greece, would you eat shark?
I'd have to think about that. I mean, there's this kind of taboo against eating carnivores, I think. That's why, like, the idea of eating lion or tiger is kind of problematic. So I don't know.
Is that taboo in Greece, you're saying, or more generally?
No, I think that's more our taboo. I don't know. I mean, you don't see people eating other carnivores in the U.S. very often. I could be wrong, but...
I won't say the alligator, but that's another story.
Alligator, yeah.
Well, the point was, it's actually a point. It proves your point because...
It's exotic.
It was exotic. I did this last day class to sort of prove...
That it could be done.
That could be done, yeah. I think that was the point.
Well, and I guess that's the other thing, because I do eat fish, so I'm not a real vegetarian.
Of course. So really, on that ground, you couldn't rule out shark at all. It's the predator. It's the predator thing that would hold you back.
Maybe, I imagine it's not very tasty either. It has this kind of image of being tough and chewy. I don't know. Maybe if it was tasty, I don't know. And then my graduate students used to question me about why eating fish was okay, or shrimp especially. They would ask me why I like shrimp. I do like shrimp a lot. And I would say that they don't
like that shrimp gazpacho you had last night at the baseball game?
Other
people are eating hot dogs and you think it's okay to go off and eat shrimp?
I've got to declare my difference. But I think shrimp don't have memory, and that's the thing for me. Shrimp doesn't know that it's coming, that death is coming. You take a lamb to cut its throat, and it knows what's going on.
Okay, but wait a second. Are we talking about memory, or are we talking about anticipation of the future? Or somehow those are the same thing?
Yeah, it's temporal kind of depth of field, I guess, is what I'm talking about here. And maybe fish do.
I'm no bias related to the fact that you've spent your entire anthropological career studying historical consciousness and temporalities. And
well, you got to think that it's important if you've been studying it all your life.
Touche. Good point. So, good. Okay.
Maybe there's some fish that actually do have memory. I talked to a marine biologist once, and she said that some fish are definitely smarter than others. And mackerel, for example, she wouldn't have any hesitation eating mackerel because...
Just dumb as hell.
That's right.
You know, this podcast is not only revealing, but it's full of practical good advice like that. Don't feel bad, just eat the mackerel. I've also heard this theory that what if you just fed the mayonnaise directly to the tuna fish while it's still alive? It's kind of like they've got seedless grapes. It's like mayonnaise-full fish, tuna fish.
if it's only eating mayonnaise, maybe that would work. And then it would have to be a strict diet, though.
Right, okay. Now, let me ask you another fish-related question. You were to compare anthropology to Jaws... And, of course, all the things we say in that chapter about Jaws and the shark. Just the shark, actually, in fact, apart from that movie. But the shark sort of still being a great mystery for scientists. And sort of like Moby Dick or the whale also being a symbol of mystery. And, of course, it's probably no coincidence that these are also predators or they're high up on the food chain. But we make that argument in there, of course, that there's a certain sense there that you never really understand the shark. And the same, well, of course, we're comparing that to never understanding the other. You think you're looking into the eyes. One minute you think you're understanding it's lifeless. Another minute you're seeing it's full of life and it's back and forth. And it's sort of the process that a lot of people go through just in general with trying to understand other cultures. Now, in trying to think about anthropology and mysteries, what would be the equivalent of the shark for anthropologists? In other words, what's a contemporary mystery, a contemporary shark for anthropologists, something that we, cultural anthropologists, that we're getting there, we really just don't understand it, though. It's a mystery.
Well, I don't want to speak for the whole field. I can only speak for myself.
That's a very good point. In fact, that's all there is, ultimately.
But to me, I guess it's that question of how does culture get from one person to another? You know, it's an old question in anthropology, but it's one that we've made some little steps you know, then we forget about it for 20 years and then we come back to it again. And it's one that you know, I think it matters a lot because obviously it's not the same in every culture and is being changed by technology. And you don't want to be a technological determinist about it, and we certainly want to have something different to say than, you know, some of the people who just talk about memes and the internet and all of that. But I still think that question of how does culture get from one person to another, and how does it change in the process is something that still excites me.
Uh-huh.
It still seems to matter.
So, and I don't want to project here, but I am tempted, of course, tie some things together here. And in other words, it's really like the mayonnaise and the tuna fish problem. How does that mayonnaise get? How can you get it in more directly to the tuna? So really, as we're seeing, everything is connected, and it's all related to sharks and fish. And that's, I think, as much closure as is needed, unless you feel...
I think E.M. Forster said only connect, and that's a good motto for anthropology, so that's one that I'd be happy putting on as my epitaph.
That's excellent. So, Dave, Professor Sutton, I'd like to just get right to the heart of it and ask you, what were you for Halloween last year? And what were you thinking?
Well, I chose to go as Don Corleone, and...
Nice.
That went pretty well because I, like him, I have a cat...
my
graduate students have been calling me the Godfather for a long time because of their great fear of me.
Really?
And so
I'm learning new things already.
So I guess it was kind of trying to channel that and make it more a reality. They've been giving me Godfather pictures for my office, and one student bought me the Godfather game, and so it's been a kind of long-standing thing, and I just kind of took it to the next level last year. It was a student Halloween party, and so I got to surprise them by coming as their image of me. In the flesh.
Very interesting. Now, I'm imagining, knowing you as I do, and knowing your graduate students, I've been lucky going out there for visits and met a lot of them, that there's also a good amount of tongue-in-cheek when they call you the Godfather. When they say you're scary, there also, I suppose, a little bit of teasing there, and
no.
Because really, so you're just
no,
scared.
But it's the Godfather, as we know, that is not like he's not like Michael,
mm-hmm.
You know. So one of the reasons you like him so much in the movies is you never see his violence, or when you do, and. Godfather Part 2. I mean, well, you do in the first Godfather, it's always second hand, and in Godfather Part 2 you see it a little bit, but it's always very justified.
Again, now talking about the father, Vito Corleone's violence.
That's right.
As opposed to the son, Michael,
that's
or
right.
Al Pacino. Yeah, Brando as opposed to Al Pacino. So you're more in the Brando. It's a nurturing, you know, you look terrible, I want you to eat more. There's, you're certainly...
That's right.
Sharing meals.
It's a power that seems on the surface to be very nurturing and pleasant, but holds this violent potentiality behind it.
And that is just, it's so you. I mean, I'm just trying to wrap my head around this. As I say, if nobody else enjoys this podcast, I'll maybe be able to enjoy it myself and play it over again. And I'm just trying to think about that. How do you feel? I know now you've had a while getting used to this and these comments, but were you kind of shocked at first when they did start the referring to you as the Godfather? I don't know if you can remember back to some of those early times. Did that strike you as this bizarre, you know, that's the last character you would have thought yourself would be compared to?
No, I think it, from the beginning it was kind of an honor, and because I had been waiting for a while for my power to be recognized.
Well, once again, Dave has surprised me in this short podcast of ours, coming up with these comparisons to The Godfather, and I can see him as many things, certainly interesting, surprising, funny. I just don't still quite see it, the powerful Godfather figure. But I'm glad that some graduate students see the resemblance there. I, of course, noticed it a little bit in the linguistic sense of his volume, maybe even a little mumbling in the Godfatherly sense. But mainly, I think it's kind of funny to imagine Dave that way. And if you want to go back and take a look at his picture, and you decide what he's getting at there. Anyway, this will conclude our podcast. Hopefully, we'll get a chance to continue, find out more about this wild and crazy character who sees himself as Maude and the Godfather, and probably as Jaws as well. Okay, thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next one.